This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
I butchered this last time. Hopefully I won't butcher it this time. Etienne de la Boutie squared. Thank you for joining me in the trenches. Did I get it right?
You did. And it's a pleasure to be with you and your audience. You know, for your audience that might not be familiar with my work, I'm an author, and my first book was called Government, the Biggest Scam in History
Exposed.
Which I did, which took quite some time to make it to South Africa.
Took 6 months initially.
6 months.
No, but that's because I told you you shouldn't use the standard postal service. It'll never arrive.
Well, I mean, you know, example of voluntarism in action. We started with the postal service after 5.5 months of failure and book being returned to me here in the United States. We tried again with a private company, Federal Express, and Federal Express was able to get it there almost instantly.
Within like 4 or 5 days.
Voluntarism in action. Pardon?
4 or 5 days. It was very quick.
Yeah, it did take a little bit, but they made it where the government was unable to get the job done.
Etienne, this is a conversation that I've been having a few times since 2020, when we realized that there wasn't too much difference, though, between governments and corporations and the private sector. I mean, you have so much collusion going on.
And so I agree with that, but also what I think that you're seeing, you know, especially here in the United States, is you're not seeing really a true free market. What you're seeing is crony capitalism, and that crony capitalism starts with the banks being able to create money out of thin air using a technique called fractional reserve banking. And so what I believe is going on in the case that I make in Government, the Biggest Scam in History, and in my new book, To See the Cages, To Leave It, is that the banks are creating money out of thin air, and they're providing unlimited capital to favored corporations to buy up and to dominate their own little, you know, corner of the economy. And this is why you're seeing the monopolization. This is why you're seeing the chain stores. It's not free market. It's not even capitalism. Technically, it would be called crony capitalism. And there's a fascistic component. So the government and the corporations have partnered politically, where certain corporations are getting contracts and you know, we're buying weapon systems that we don't need for wars based on lies and manufactured intelligence and just so that we can have wars and sell weapon systems. And you would not see that in a true free market. You would not see that in a voluntary world. It really, you know, both the monopolization of everything, the cartelization of these companies, you know, that really is the product of allowing the banks to create money out of thin air and being able to pick the winners in the economy. And so, like, I don't think it's free market and I don't think it's capitalism.
For my UK column audience who might not know your work, what is your general thing?
So I'm a voluntarist. And a voluntarist is someone that does not believe in the legitimacy, the necessity, or the desirability of having a government, and believes that all relationships between people should be voluntary. And so nobody has rights that other people don't. Nobody has an exemption for morality, especially the government. And there's a little bit of an understanding of kind of like economics, in the sense that, you know, there's an understanding there that the free market would provide everything that governments provide, the armed protective services that they call the police, or dispute resolution that they call the courts, or, you know, running the air traffic control system, you name it. Everything the government does would be done better, faster, and cheaper by the free market, and everybody would be dramatically wealthier if we had true free market money that the money should be gaining value every single year and buying more and more as productivity improvements and innovations reduce the cost of either manufacturing or distributing the luxuries and necessities of life. And so, my book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History, makes the case that government has been the biggest scam in all of human history. And that the subtitle is How Intergenerational Organized Crime Runs the Government, the Media, and Academia. And my thesis is that they get away with it because they're controlling the information that society receives about the legitimacy of government, about the necessity of government, about the desirability of government, because they're controlling the information you receive in the mandatory government school or in the accredited private school. They're controlling the information that you receive over a monopoly media system. And so, globally, in the United States especially, there's about six companies running hundreds and hundreds of subsidiaries on the old school media side. You know, the newspapers, the radio stations, the television stations, every channel, government is legitimate, government is legitimate, government is legitimate. And what I expose in the new book is that, you know, that Hollywood is making the government the hero in movies and television shows. They're product placing the flag at moments of high positive emotion. They're control. Not only are they, you know, kind of controlling the information just to say that it's legitimate, but they're actually pulling on the heartstrings in the dramas and in the movies to make the government seem like it is the good guys and they're out there saving the world, whether it's Tom Cruise saving the world in Mission Impossible or Tom Cruise saving the world in Top Gun Maverick or, you know, Mulder and Scully, you know, of the FBI, you know, saving the world, from the FBI standpoint, whatever it is, you know, it's a trick. And so government is, it isn't really government because, you know, you can think of government as a tool of what I call intergenerational organized crime. People that long ago, centuries ago, figured out how to use government and control of perception to rob the population. But it's always illegitimate. It's impossible to have a legitimate moral government. You can't delegate rights you don't have yourself. You can't be bound by a social contract you didn't sign. If, you know, my fiance and myself can't vote to rob Jeremy because there's two of us and one of him, it doesn't matter if there's 330 million of us. There's no magical additional person that makes something immoral now moral. And so it has been the biggest scam in all of human history, and it is a way of robbing and tax farming populations and controlling populations, and that money is being extracted out the back door. It's being extracted from the banks being able to steal the value out of people's money using fractional reserve banking. It's being extracted by the weapon systems that we don't need to fight wars based on lies and manufactured, you know, intelligence. It's extracted through mandatory vaccinations that actually harm your kids instead of help your kids. It's extracted in ethanol subsidies and other, you know, subsidies to big ag players. It's extracted in a monopoly medical system where the doctors are essentially trained by the pharmaceutical industry to be pill pushers and have, you know, regulated medicine where only allopathic medicine is allowed to, you know, be taught in medical schools or to be reimbursed by insurance or Medicare or Medicaid, and only AMA allopathic doctors have the ability to prescribe. And so there's all these different ways that government has structured society to hurt the population, to keep them dumbed down so that they could be robbed and they can be tax farmed. And I'm exposing that with kind of these easy to read picture books that take people from kind of 0 to 60. It's not really a picture book, but there's a lot of memes, there's a lot of visualizations, there's a lot of media ownership charts, because most people are visual learners. And they come to insight much quicker if you show them a visualization of what I just talked about with the media ownership. And so I'm waking people up and I'm providing tools for you to wake up your friends, your family, and your colleagues to what's really going on.
Just quickly, before we go any further, I can guarantee you that if I don't ask you this, I'm going to get emails about it. But your name, Etienne Delaboutie Squared, it's obviously a parody.
It's a nom de plume or a nom de guerre. It's a pen name or a war name. And so the original Étienne de la Boétie Squared was a French political philosopher. He wrote in the 16th century. And he was really one of the first to really expose the tricks and the techniques that governments use, not just to get obedience, because obedience is kind of easy if you've got a whip or a gun or a, you're able to dominate, but to get adoration and fealty and, you know, everybody wants to go to the White House and hang out with the president and, all hail the chief and God save the queen. And we love our rulers. And so he exposed back in the 1500s, he exposed the playbook that rulers were using, not just in the 1500s, but some of the techniques that he outlined in his book, A Discourse on Voluntary Servitude. Some of those techniques were already 1,000+ years old, and some of those techniques are still being used today. And so when I wrote my first book, I had kids in the government school system. And so I didn't want them to get, I was divorced. My wife had them in the government school system. I personally would rather my children be uneducated than educated by the state. But she waged lawfare and had, you know, custody and put them in the government school system against my will. But I didn't want them to get heat for what dad was doing. And so I used the nom de plume. They're now, one of them's out of college and one of them's about to graduate. I can go back to my real name. My real name is Howard. I'll just say that. But like now everybody knows me as Étienne de la Boétie Squared. And if you put in the number 2, then you find me versus the at the end of Boétie. If you put in the number 2, you find me versus the, you know, 16th century French political philosopher.
I asked you if I butchered it and I did butcher it. And you said I said it correctly. It's Boétie, not Boétie.
Well, no, it could be either Boétie or Boétie. Okay. And so I've actually had, different actual French citizens tell me both ways. But the one that told me Boétie, he was actually wearing a beret. And so I took his, he's got to be French if he's wearing a beret. And so like
and a commie.
It wasn't a red beret.
I'll tell you a little bit of trivia that you probably don't know. Boétie, Boetie, in Afrikaans, means little brother. Just thought I'd tell you that.
Oh, that's cool. I've heard that Étienne is the English equivalent of Stephen, but I've never heard that Boétie is brother. So that's kind of cool as well.
The multi-layered opening that you gave me, we have to clarify a few things. So you talk about voluntarism, which is another way of saying anarchism, but that's got a bad connotation, doesn't it?
Well, it has a bad connotation because the rulers, so anarchy means no rulers. It doesn't mean no rules. It just means no rulers. But because the rulers don't want the population to know that there's an option on the menu called no rulers, the rulers have used this media system, this monopoly media system, okay, and even control of the dictionary, which I break down in my book, Government, the Biggest Scam in History, and I actually show, compare the 1827 definition of the word anarchy from the Webster's Dictionary with the modern, version from Merriam-Webster, so you can see how it's been changed over time to chaos and dystopia. And so the rulers don't want the population to know that you don't really need rulers. Because if it was between rulers and no rulers, then they would probably choose no rulers. And so the rulers have used this monopoly media system to control of the dictionary. The Merriam-Webster dictionary is owned by Encyclopedia Britannica, which is owned by the Safra banking family. And once the Safra banking family took it over, they put one of the heads, I think it was Leslie Gelb, one of the past presidents of the Council on Foreign Relations, on the editorial advisory board. And this is one of, another example of how moneyed interests can control the information that you receive by controlling things like the dictionary and the encyclopedia to make, you know, quote unquote anarchy look bad. I like to use voluntarism, which means the same, essentially the same thing. It's a world without rulers, but it doesn't have the, number one, it doesn't have the same baggage that that the word anarchy has. So you don't have to explain to somebody, no, I'm not the kind of anarchist that you see in the media, you know, dressed in black, throwing petrol, bottles, flaming, Molotov cocktails through windows. I'm actually I'm into economics, and I think that it would, that a world without government, everyone would be, dramatically wealthier, and there would be more harmony in the world, because you're not having to fight over control of the school board, at the election level, where if you lose at the local level on the school board, your kid gets taught critical race theory or gets taught LGBTQT studies, or if you're in Detroit, gets taught Islamic studies or whatever it is. And so you would just buy your child whatever kind of education that you want. You could get them Montessori, you could get them, Waldorf, you could get them Acton Academy, you could get, self-directed learning, you could get vocational school. There's no reason for us to be fighting over many of the things that we fight at the ballot box. One of the other problems with government is it is unbelievably easy for moneyed interests to hijack the election in a variety of ways. Here in the United States, we vote on unauditable black box voting machines and with mail-in ballots that are both notorious black box voting machines for the ability to be hijacked and hacked at the central tabulator and have the vote totals changed in real time. And with mail-in ballots, anybody can arrive at the courthouse with a big sack of ballots and throw off an election. And so it's the worst way to organize society. It's the dumbest way to organize society. It doesn't produce the goods. You don't get good outcomes. And I think people are starting to realize that they're not getting the outcome that they want, no matter how hard they vote, Jeremy. They're not getting the outcome that they want, and so I think it's definitely, it seems to be the fastest growing political movement in the United States, as far as I can tell.
So I think democracy, just as a concept, is a sham anyway. I don't yes. buy into it at all. Hans Hermann Hoppe wrote a great book called Democracy, the God That Failed. And he mm-hmm. kind of makes an argument that on the face of it seems to challenge what you're saying. He suggests that natural order is obviously the best type of governance of people, which would mm-hmm. be order that's just naturally created. But with that not around, monarchy, he suggests, is a better system because it's private ownership of property.
Correct. And so in that book, he makes the case that, the monarch has a long-term interest in his kingdom, whereas in democracy, these politicians, they only get elected, for 2 to 4 years. They may be out of office in 2 to 4 years. And so they have a very short timeline, and they're going to steal everything they can for themselves while they're in power. And so that long-term interest that you actually get better outcomes because the monarch has a long-term interest in his kingdom versus the elected politician has a very short timeline.
Yes, but I was making the point that monarchy is still a type of government. I guess you could argue that it's voluntary in the sense that you don't have to live in that monarchy, but it is nonetheless privately owned.
Right, right. And by the way, so now there are also examples of privately owned, essentially countries or free private cities. And so in March of this year, we were in Prospera, you know, on the Isle of Roatan off the coast of Honduras, where you know, a group of private investors and businessmen negotiated a sovereignty from the government of Honduras in what's called a ZA, or a zone of economic development, you know, within the country, where the laws of Honduras do not apply. And you have a private government in many ways, like a, you know, like a monarchy. But so they, so the, but it's, but you know, they, there is a level of democracy, and that, you know, people can make proposals for things, and there are, there's a level of elected representation, but they don't, but they're providing governance as a service, unlike, you know, so you're opting in to live in Prospera. You're agreeing to certain things, kind of like a, in an HOA, you know, I'm not going to, you know, if you opt into an HOA, you're not going to paint your house pink. You're not going to, you know, leave cars in your front yard, and you're going to accept, you know, reasonable rules to coexist, you know, with your neighbors. But people are now, you know, moving with their feet and saying, hey, I'd rather live under a private government that guarantees me that they're never going to raise my taxes. By the way, Prospera has one of the lowest effective tax rates on the planet. And so it's a 5% income tax. It's a 1% tax on business, and a 2.5% retail sales tax. And people are saying, hey, and they have, you know, way better rules, way better, you know, less regulation, less bureaucracy, less red tape, no monopolies. Like, it's a way better form of government than anything that's out there. And it's voluntary, and people are starting to vote with their feet, and they're moving to these jurisdictions. You know, in the United States, people are moving to, you know, I'm actually in Florida right now because we're contemplating moving to Florida, and we're looking around. We're talking about Miami. I'm on my way to Miami. We're looking for, you know, a community to live in Florida, because it's one of the top five freest states in the United States. And what we're seeing is people in the United States vote with their feet, and they're moving from places like New York and Massachusetts and California, and they're moving to places like New Hampshire, where the Free State Project is. They're moving to Texas, Florida, Idaho, and U.S. states that have way more individual freedom, personal freedom, less taxes, less regulations. And so you're seeing that happen, not just in the United States, but around the world. But that's one example. I'm a living example of that. I'm on a, you know, a community hunting trip to Florida right now. And I'm living in a state called Tennessee, which is also one of the top five freest states in the United States. And so, you know, it's a dynamic, I think, that's going on everywhere.
The reason why I brought up Hans Hermann Hoppe's work is because he kind of implies that humans want governance. They want hierarchies because it helps with a sense of order. Now, if you're talking about everybody governing themselves, or everybody's an individual making their own decisions, how does that tug of war get played?
Well, first of all, I think governance is a great thing. Like, you can have governance without having government, and Prospera is a, you know, is a great example of where, you know, a company is taking over a, you know, 1,000 acres in Honduras, and they're offering governance as a service, but you're not having that forced onto you. You're moving to be in a place where you were, you know, like the same way that like an HOA isn't forced onto you. You're agreeing to the terms of the HOA before you move into the, you know, the planned community. Now, you get a lot of benefits from being in a planned community. I used to live in one in Ashburn, Virginia, that had 5,000 plus families. And, you know, yeah, I can't, you know, paint my house pink or put cars in the yard. But we had a magnificent community with like outdoor tennis courts, indoor tennis courts. I think we had 7 different community pools, swimming pools. We had a basketball courts. We had indoor gymnasium and saunas and steam rooms. And like, it was amazing, the amenities. So you're like, okay, well, I'll you know, suffer a little bit under the HOA for that, for all of these amenities and this quality of life, but I can leave anytime I want. I can self if it changes or whatever. Government is very, very different. Government is a gun at your head that you can't, not only can you not leave, as Roger Ver just found out, but like, you know, they'll come after you decades later. They'll kick in your door. Government is dangerous. It's creepy in many ways.
I had a look to see if there were examples historically of, shall we say, I don't want to say countries, but let's say regions that haven't had government. And the Viking era is of specific interest to me because they spent about 800 or 900 years fairly government free in the Iceland region. A lot of people don't know this. But there aren't that many examples, and I'm wondering why.
Well, so there are the Iceland is a great example of where there was no government, but also Ireland is probably the best example that had 9,000 years. And I think, you know, part of the reason is that government has been the biggest scam in history. And what it has done is it has allowed, you know, a very small amount of people to amass tremendous, tremendous amounts of wealth by stealing it from the population, concentrating it in themselves. And they don't want there to be examples of free market, you know, no government places on the planet. And so, you know, Prosper right now is under attack from the commie government of, as an example, is under attack from the commie government of Honduras. When the Zeti law was passed and Prosper was incorporated, there was no, you know, it was a pro-business, you know, pro-growth, you know, government was in place. Communists came to power and they didn't want an example of a thriving, low cost, low regulation, low tax, example of prosperity, literally on their doorstep, not on their doorstep, in the house. Like you can go in that room and it's way better than the rest of the house. And like, what's going on in that room? Well, they're letting people be free. They're giving people more freedom. They're not stealing as much of the money. They don't have as much red tape. And that's creating prosperity. Whereas your policies are impoverishing the population. Honduras is, frankly, excuse my language, a shithole. Other than Prosper, and there's nice places in Honduras as well. But you get the idea. The currency is worth the Lempira is worth about 4.5 cents to the U.S. dollar. There's not a lot of economic, you know, activity going on. There's not a lot of companies that want to have their stuff nationalized or, you know, be under the threat of the nationalization that Prosper is under. And so outside of Prosper, there's very, you know, little economically going on as exciting as what's going on in Prosper.
And I can tell you right now that you'll get many people saying, ah, but that's because of foreign influence. But the foreign influence is governments.
Well, it is. Yes. Yeah, so it's not just, by the way, so it's not just the government of Honduras. It's also Cuba and Venezuela and China. And so they don't want there to like none of the governments, you know, to get back to the, you know, the answer, your original point, none of the governments that are running government on their population and tax farming their population and robbing and stealing and controlling their population want people to know that you can have harmony and prosperity without government. So that's not in their interest. And so in the case of Prospera, it's not just the commie government of Honduras, it's also the commie government of Venezuela, the commie government of Cuba, and the commie government of China that have united and are opposed to having an example of a thriving, prosperous, free market alternative to government, you know, on their doorstep. And so that's why I think that anytime that there is a population somewhere, whether it's the Indians in the United States or whether it's the Irish that were crushed by the English, you know, we're going to stamp that out so that people don't understand that you can live in freedom without government.
Just for clarity, when we talk about government, what are we talking about?
We're talking about a group that has given itself a monopoly of violence over a given geographical area. And they claim this monopoly of violence either through monarchy, the divine right of kings. So like you said, like a king can be a government. In that case, the king says it's the divine right of kings. In the case of, most, Western governments, it's because of easily hijacked democracy. And so we're going to, we're going to have elections that we're controlling, that it was our idea to have elections, and that we've got a disparity of campaign funds. And through this easily rigged election cycle, we're going to say, oh, we're in charge because the people elected us, even if you didn't vote. And even if you're 100% opposed to what the government is doing, and even if you're sitting there going, the whole thing's a scam, it's illegitimate. One of the things I want, just to really emphasize with your audience is it is impossible to have a legitimate government, even with an election. Okay. Election is the political equivalent of a gang rape or a lynching. Okay, just because the majority wants to rob Peter to pay Paul or wants to lynch black folks, it doesn't make it moral just because the perpetrators outnumber their victim. And if we're on an island and there's, 10 of us, okay, and we have an election and we say these four have to do all the work and they've got to pick all the coconuts and they got to build and whatever, and we're going to go ahead and kick back and we're going to, not do it. That doesn't mean that the four legitimately, morally are now required to pick all the coconuts and do all the work just because six people voted that these four people have to do all the work. And it doesn't make it legitimate. And so it doesn't matter if there's 10 people or if there's, 331 million in the United States people, there's no magical additional person that makes something that is immoral and illogical now moral and logical. So it has been the biggest scam in history. Government has been the biggest scam in history, and they've gotten away with it because my new book really breaks it down. They've indoctrinated in the United States, especially they've indoctrinated it as a religion into the population. So my new book, To See the Cage Is to Leave It, 25 techniques the few use to control the many. They're using unethically manipulative techniques to get people to associate themselves with the country and with the government, so they can be tricked and tax farmed and robbed and controlled. We just had the 4th of July, and I'm sure people around the world have seen pictures of Americans dressed ridiculously in the flag of the system that is robbing and controlling them, because they've fallen for these techniques, and they have subsumed themselves into this idea of being not a free and independent human being, but being an American or being a Briton or being a South African, or they've associated themselves with the government in a way that allows the government to rob and tax farm them. And they've actually incorporated that into their identity. And so what I'm exposing in my new book is that, number one, these governments are tricking you into a religious, view of having a government so that they can rob and tax farm you.
What happens to countries and culture and roads and all those things that will come up, in conversation?
So without a doubt, because the world has been created in this hierarchical way, this top down, way, there's going to be transition costs, and there's going to be irregularities, we'll say, in transitioning to a new system, to getting away from government. But that is something that we have to do because, number one, not only is government illegitimate, not only is it illogical, not only is it immoral, But now here in the United States, especially, you know, government is robbing the population out of the value of the currency, stealing the value of the currency in a way that is quite destructive to the average person. And so we had it pretty good for a long run here in the United States where, you know, the government's thumb wasn't as oppressive and wasn't as, you know, destructive as it is now. But now, you know, there's really no denying that we're, you know, we're in double digit inflation here in the United States. You know, we're now seeing the value of the money that we earn and save disappear, you know, like the dew, you know, like morning dew in the sun. And so it's now time to, you know, like, sorry, government, but you've got to go. You didn't deliver the goods. You didn't do what you were supposed to do. You didn't even, you know, the government doesn't even in the United States doesn't even respect the natural law rights that are enshrined in the Bill of Rights, utterly ignores them at every step of the way. And so we, you know, there's a case to be made that, okay, it was an experiment. It didn't work. Look good on paper. The Constitution looks good on paper, sounds good, doesn't work at all. Doesn't protect individual rights, does not limit government at all, did not work. At all. There's nobody that can stand up and with a straight face say that the Constitution has limited government in any way, shape, or form. And there's nobody that can stand up with a straight face and say that government has protected natural law, human rights. And so it just doesn't work. And so it's got to go, even if there's transition costs.
Now, what happens when you have no government? Does culture fall apart or does it thrive?
I think it flourishes. And so, you know, right now we've got, you know, a top down, you know, in many ways, we've got this weaponized media system where, you know, I believe that you're seeing depravity and you're seeing, so, you know, if you're running slaves, if you're running, you know, a nation of slaves, you don't want them to be moral. You don't want them to be upright. You know, you want them to be drunk and drugged. And, you know, you want them, you know, morally compromised. And so what I believe is that there's a kind of cultural debilitation, program that is going on from the monopoly media to tear down the culture in many ways. And so I think, you know, you wouldn't see that, you know, you wouldn't see the monopolization of the media if it wasn't for fractional reserve banking. You know, you just wouldn't see, you know, a small handful of six companies dominating every single newspaper, radio station, television station, movie theater, movie, you know, company, streaming service, you know, the list goes on and on. That denigration of the culture is a product of government, is the child of government. And without that ability to provide certain companies in the media unlimited funds to buy up and dominate their own, you know, their competition, you just would not see, you know, what we see today. And so I think the culture would thrive if there was not this level of monopolization in the media.
But if governments are so susceptible to being manipulated and bought, that suggests that they are organizations, companies, corporations, whatever, that are more powerful than them. Let's look at Facebook or Amazon.
You're making my point exactly. I don't believe it's government at the top of the pyramid. I think it's the banks at the top of the pyramid. It's intergenerational, or we'll call it intergenerational organized crime. Okay, that figured out that the most effective way to rob and control societies is using the technique of government. And so the technique, so they lobbied and bribed in the United States, they lobbied and bribed the U.S. government to pass the Federal Reserve Act in 1913, which created a private central bank that we were never supposed to have. We'd had two other private central banks, the First Bank of the United States, the Second Bank of the United States. Both of them were found to be corrupt. They were both at the end. They had 20-year charters. At the end of their 20-year charter, they were kicked out. The Second Bank of the United States was kicked out by Andrew Jackson, who famously said, "You are a den of vipers. I will rout you out." And then the bankers waited, a couple generations until people had forgotten about out the first bank of the United States and the second bank of the United States. And then they lobbied and bribed Congress to create the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve System sits behind the banks and backstops the banks to engage in fractional reserve banking, to loan out money that they don't have, to create money out of thin air. And so when you go to a bank to get a consumer loan or a mortgage or a car loan or whatever it is, they're not loaning you depositor money. They just tickle the ivories on the keyboard. They credit your account with digital dollars. And then you spend, in the case of like a mortgage, you might spend the rest of your life paying back hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of interest on a loan that they created out of thin air. And the astronomical profits that they make from that system, number one, would be impossible without government, because government is the thing that you know makes it legal. But number two, that gives them the ability to, you know, to buy up the media, so the media never tells you how that system is inherently criminal. It's inherently unfair. It's bad for the economy. It's bad for human beings. And so so the government is a creature of the banks. The media and the corporations are a creature of the banks in many ways, the ones that have been bought up by these fractional reserve dollars. And the world would not look like this if it was not for the ability of these banks to create money out of thin air. Even though it's inflationary and even though it's stealing the value out of everybody else's money. And so that's why you're seeing prices rise. It's because absent this crooked monetary system, your dollar or your Deutschmark or your yen or your pound should be buying more and more and more and more each year if it wasn't for this criminal crooked monetary system.
So how do we get to a point without government?
Well, what I believe is, because it has been the biggest scam in history, okay? So I'm very optimistic. I'm an optimist. And what I've discovered in doing what I do is that, you know, once people realize that it's a scam, it's something that at the Art of Liberty Foundation, which is my nonprofit, we're a startup voluntarist think tank. We're spreading these voluntarist ideas around the world. We call it the one-way revolution, because once you realize and somebody really gets it in their mind, and they really understand, hey, oh wow, there's no way to have a legitimate moral government. The only moral an effective way is real freedom, and real freedom produces the goods. And so it produces more harmony, it produces more prosperity, it lifts people out of poverty. Once they get that, well, that's the good karma alternative to government. If you're voting for government, whether you're voting for Republicans or Democrats or Labor or the Tories or the Conservatives or whatever it is, you're advocating violence on your fellow man. You're advocating violence on your friends, your family, your colleagues that disagree and say, oh no, but we don't really need to have government. There's no karmic debt to being a voluntarist. It's the good karma alternative. You're not trying to impose your ruler over anybody else. You're saying, hey, the world's a self-organizing place. It produces spontaneous order. Everything the government does would be done better, faster, and cheaper by the free market. We should just leave everybody alone, quit trying to impose your ruler on somebody else. And so that's good karmically, and it produces the goods, and it leads to harmony and prosperity. And so once people figure that out, very few go back to believing in government. Because nobody likes to get tricked. Nobody likes to get fooled. Nobody likes to, especially once you realize that the government is running these unethically manipulative techniques, well, who's going to support that? So it really is a one-way revolution. And I think it's going to eventually sweep through not just the United States, but the world. I think that the scam of government will be exposed for all to see, and people will abandon it because nobody likes to be tricked. Nobody likes to be chumped. Nobody likes to have game run on them.
Yes, but that sounds very abstract. What are actual ways to delegitimize the government? So one of them, I'm guessing from what you just said now, would be to stop voting.
Stop voting is one, because you're legitimizing the government. But what I like to, you know, what I like to do is I just like to throw like a little, you know, sand in the gears every time that I can. And so, you know, one of the things that I do is I pay in cash everywhere I go. I try and pay in cash almost everywhere I go. And when I give somebody the cash, I go, you know, I'm giving, I like to pay cash because now you don't have to share it with the lying, thieving, stealing government. And so if everybody is just one, you know, example to your question is if everybody paid cash, then more mom and pop, you know, grocery stores and gas stations and guitar teachers and whatever it is would be able to keep more of their money from themselves. They wouldn't have to declare it to the government. You know, that would starve the government. You know, you're starving the banks. They're not getting the, you know, 1.5 to 2.5% that you would give them in a credit card transaction. The merchant gets to keep an additional 1.5 to 2.5% that would have gone to the banks. And so little things like, you know, and it makes it harder for governments to bring in CBDCs. It makes it harder to track and trace your purchases. There's just all these like good things that happen when you use cash. And so using cash is one example of something that you can do to destabilize the state that doesn't cost you any money. And that, you know, is helps all of the local merchants in your area. The money circulates in the economy more than if it, you know, went out the door in an electronic payment. And so so that's one example. Use gold backs, use barter silver. Here in the United States, there's actually money starting to circulate in the different states that is flexible, spendable gold. And so I'm holding up some of these. These are 24 karat gold and encased in a, you know, in a polymer. This one is 1/2000th of an ounce of gold. This one is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold. And this one is 1/100th of an ounce of gold. So it's like a little bit bigger and a little bit thicker than some of the smaller ones. But, you know, use alternative currencies that are going up in value, that are inflation proof. And then that takes away part of the, you know, the power of the government as one example of, you know, what you can do to destabilize it. Since I have my wallet open, another example is, so I back up my book with these credit card sized flash drives. And so so you get a copy of the book and documentaries and everything that is being censored by Facebook and YouTube and other social media sites and X and Twitter and everything like that. I put it on a flash drive that you can carry in your wallet, and you can be at a friend's house and you can say, hey, download this. And you're able to exchange you're able to get around the censorship. And then once somebody has, we call them a liberator. Once somebody has a liberator, they are authorized and encouraged to make copies for your friends. And so you can go to eBay and you can buy, and people do this all the time. People come up to me at conferences or events and they say, hey, I discovered your work because I was at a Liberty get together and somebody came in and threw down 30 flash drives and everybody took one. And I read your book on the drive, and like, now I know government's a scam. And so these are just little ways that you can fight back. You can get around the censorship and you can have a better, you know, people are using my book as curriculum in homeschooling to explain to their kids the scam of government. And so that their kids never, you know, are exposed, you know, never go through the mental slavery. And it is a mental slavery of gubernare mente. You know, the root words of government, gubernare, to control or govern, and mente, the mind, control the mind. And so so that system that is allowed, you know, like if you never grow up under that, you know, that's the one way revolution. And so, so these are just a few, you know, small examples of how you can fight back easily.
Are you a fan of Bitcoin?
I'm a fan of cryptocurrency. I think that, you know, like, we could do an entire show on my thoughts on Bitcoin, but I actually believe that Bitcoin was created by the NSA. The United States, one of the spy agencies that deals with cryptography and breaking cryptography and things like that, is called the National Security Agency. And they published a white paper that has since been declassified called How to Make a Mint, the Cryptography of Anonymous Electronic Cash, a decade before Satoshi published his white paper on Bitcoin. The crypto anarchists were already trying to solve the problem of stateless money, of inflation-proof stateless money with e-gold and DigiCash and other, you know, crypto projects. And so I think the NSA front ran them, you know, with this anonymous Satoshi Nakamoto, you know, white paper. But in that NSA white paper, How to Make a Mint, they actually outline the blockchain and the wallet. And so so I think they front ran what was already going on. There was already crypto anarchists that were working on the problem of stateless money. And so I think they wanted to get ahead of the parade. But I'm a fan of having a free market in money. And crypto is essentially a free market in money. And so you're, you know, I own Bitcoin. I sell my books for Bitcoin. I've been selling my books for cryptocurrency and gold backs and barter silver for years. And so I've done very, very well with that, but it is, but I do believe that it is the NSA in the background. And I think you're now starting to see that, because it is a public blockchain. It can be surveilled. You can do block analysis on it. You can figure out what everybody has. It can be tracked, traced, and controlled. So I like the privacy coins like Monero, Epic Cash, other privacy coins better than I like Bitcoin for some reasons, although I am benefiting from Bitcoin's rise in the sense that I own some of it and it's doing well because the system is stealing the oxygen from the other coins with Bitcoin. They're all in on it together at a certain degree, and it's been chosen the winner because it doesn't threaten the central banks because it's so slow. And the transaction fees are so high that I think that's the reason it was chosen, because it did not really threaten the banks immediately the way that different currencies that had, you know, better privacy features or had lower transaction costs or had faster settlements, you know, would have actually threatened the dollar. So we'll steal all the oxygen out of those coins, and we'll bring, you know, all the focus on this one cryptocurrency that is essentially broken, that is not really going to threaten the dollar system in the short term. And then that gives us time to build out what we want to build out, which is using Bitcoin to tax, trace, and surveil the population.
An observation that you might share is there is a very strange type of messiah complex, savior complex going on in the world. Trump, for example, he's going to save us.
And so it's one of the techniques in my new book that I discuss, to see the cage is to leave it. And so one of the 25 techniques is that people, that human beings, and we touched on this a second ago, but human beings are predisposed to have a leader. And that's called evolutionary leader theory in psychology. And the idea is that, we're a tribal system. And so the country is the artificial tribe, but in the tribe, it was an evolutionary advantage to have a strong leader. And so human beings, unless you yourself are a leader, you are innately predisposed to want to have a leader. And so this organized crime system understands behavioral psychology. And so what they're going to do is they're going to give the population a choice between red leader and blue leader. And then because human beings need to have a leader, or many, many human beings feel and believe in their heart of hearts that they have to have a leader, they're going to infuse their identity with their preferred leader, not understanding that it's a complete fake choice. It's what's called a Hobson's choice. Old man Hobson ran a livery stable. You could rent any stable. You could have any or rent any horse in the stable as long as it was the black one at the end of the stalls. And so a Hobson's choice is a fake choice. And so this organized crime system is going to give you blue leader or red leader. But the reality is that both blue leader and red leader are 100% aligned on all of the issues that are important to the ruling system. And then they squabble over kind of hot button issues that don't really matter to the rulers, but they can get the population all hot and bothered, whether it's, you know, transgender issues or whether it's abortion or, you know, like different things like that. They'll fight over those issues. But both the Republicans and the Democrat at the leadership level in Washington, D.C., they're 100% aligned on fractional reserve banking. They're 100% aligned on confiscatory taxation. They're 100% aligned on them giving the orders and you taking them. They're 100% aligned on endless wars. They're 100% aligned on our support for Israel. They're 100% aligned on a great many things that aren't in the, you know, aren't in the interests of the population. And, you know, years ago we had the banks were proposing a bailout of $750 billion that, according to Bloomberg, ended up being $29 trillion. And the population was opposed to it. Somewhere around 90% of the population was opposed to bailing out the banks and giving the banks a nickel. And the politicians did it anyway. And so there is no, you know, there is no real democracy. There is no real, you know, electing a representative. It's 100% rigged system. There's no way to win it. The only way to win is not to play.
The system has created such a beautiful confusion within the population.
Well, so you know, and I break it down in the book again. And so if you're controlling the information that society receives through this monopoly media system, you can make them believe a great many things. You can make them believe that tariffs are good for American manufacturing and American jobs and everything, even though it's essentially a stealth tax. And I believe that they're actually going with the tariffs because so many people in the United States are not paying their income tax. Tens and tens of millions of people are not paying their income tax, that it's easier for them to get their hand around the throat of the importer or the exporter than it is to try and run around to the tens of millions of people in the United States that aren't paying their income tax and trying to, you know, like collect that.
Blame China.
And so it's just wait. Yeah, yeah. So now the population, not only do they still have the income tax, but now they've got these tariffs. And I got news for you. Joe Sixpack and Jane Baglunch. That tariff, the companies don't pay the tariff. The companies pass along the cost of the tariff onto you in higher prices. And so you're the one that's paying the tariff. You're the one. It's just a tax. It's a hidden tax. And so, a lot of the population doesn't understand that because the television is telling them one thing, and they're having the information about the reality of the situation controlled to them. And if you don't understand that's going on, you're crippled. You're not even in the game. You're not even on the field if you don't understand how they're controlling the population with the screens and being able to manipulate the information that the society receives. Right here is the pirate signal. This is the Nebuchadnezzar, you know, surfacing. You're getting, you know, actual, like, you know, truth that you're not going to get on the mainstream media. You're never going to see on the mainstream media or the mainstream alternative media voluntarist ideas. You're never going to see on a mainstream media somebody telling you that government itself is inherently immoral, illogical, and illegitimate. you're just never going to see that. And so it's only through these pirate broadcasts that, you know, that we're getting truth to the people. And I think in the information age, ultimately, we're going to power over the mainstream media. There's so many podcasts. There's so many people that are now, you know, telling what they know and exposing the scam of government and the illegitimacy of government and the criminality of government, that there's no way to hide it in the information age. And so I think we win in the end because there's just no way to stop the signal.
And there also are some good books that go back a few decades that are worth reading. Also, Adam Smith, I think, wrote some good stuff. So did Murray Rothbard, Ludwig von Mises, Hayek, Friedrich Hayek, and even a little bit of Milton Friedman.
I have most of those on the Liberator. So again, so there's no way to stop the signal. There's no way to stop somebody handing a Liberator to a friend or a family member or a colleague and saying, this is the information that is being hidden from society. And not only, you know, can you have it, but you can make copies for your friends and your colleagues and family as well. And so there's no way to stop the signal in the information age.
Well, you have plugged your book quite a lot. So one last time, how can I follow your work?
My original book is Government, the Biggest Scam in History Exposed. It's been the best-selling book at over 24 Liberty conferences and events. We've sold 7,000 hard copies to 25 plus countries, where people are frequently paying more than the cost of the book in postage and shipping handling. We're now getting it onto Amazon. We just and so we're going to have it in foreign distribution in a number of weeks. That's government-scam.com. The new book is To See the Cage is to Leave It: 25 Techniques the Few Use to Control the Many, and that is at cthecage.com. My organization is called the Art of Liberty Foundation. We're a startup voluntarist think tank. We're exposing the illegitimacy and the criminality of government from a principled voluntarist standpoint. That's at artofliberty.org. And you can get most of my articles for free on my Substack at artofliberty.substack.com. You know, in 4 years of doing this, I've never had anybody that's challenged me on the legitimacy and desirability and the, you know, necessity of having a government. And I've offered to debate people. I'd love to actually have somebody actually debate me on the basis of what I'm saying. But I haven't found any takers.
It's not like, and so I think, it's not like somebody's going to listen to this and go, nah, I want more government in my life.
It has been the biggest scam in history, and I think more and more people are realizing that every day. And it's only and this revolution is only going in one direction, and we win in the end. And so it's a good news message.
All right, well, Etienne de la Boissie squared, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
It has been a pleasure, and I look forward to our next conversation.